A very special edition of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans tonight. Sunday, not our usual recording time, but hey, it's not that often that one of the best black sci-fi things ever concludes on a Sunday night. So your three favorite middle-aged nerds are here to rock it out. So, Mark Abbott, Kirk Johnson, and myself, Stephen Van Patten. We are here because, Lovecraft Country finale. Mm-hmm. With all the fields. And a pet Shoggoth.
Yes.
What the hell? I'm going to warn people right now, if you have not seen the episode yet, you probably want to see the episode and then come back to us. Because
Spoiler.
Yeah, you know, Kirk, you know, he has no filter when it comes to spoilers. He's King Spoiler, basically. Mm-hmm.
God of spoilers.
The God of spoilers. That's right. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And we screwed up every once in a while, too, but you know.
I was having coffee with Anansi, and, you know, he was chopping it up about some shit.
I bet you were. Oh, my God.
But, you know.
So, fellas, that was, it was heavy, it was great, it was beautiful, I thought.
Yeah.
A little sad, of course. A little sad. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we're looking at a season two, so what do we think? What do we expect here at this point?
He's out for revenge. He's traumatized and out for revenge.
And that's quite an interesting pet.
Yeah.
That's
a black Shoggoth too. A black one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? Yeah.
Black Shoggoths matter. Right. Exactly.
So how that black Shoggoth just beat up all the white Shoggoths like the NBA?
Wow! So you're saying the one black Shoggoth is basically the Harlem Globetrotters, and
the white ones are the Lakers.
Okay. I was just gonna say, and the white ones were the Washington Generals, but
I was gonna say, you know, Michael Jordan of Shoggoths. And
right.
Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson of Shoggoths, taking on the Celtics.
just eat it. Right. Mm. Yeah. I can't wait for those kicks to come out. All right.
Yeah.
They'll be online around the block.
They're Shoggoths.
Yeah.
Get me a pair. You see them eyes on them shoes? See them eyes? They should only work at night, though. Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you can't wear them out during the day.
They start flipping on you.
Mm-hmm. They disintegrate. They got a line around the corner at night because shoes can't handle in the day.
So, Mr. Abbott, with your fresh shave.
Mm-hmm. Starfleet finally got you, huh? Yes.
Looking like Charles Dutton in Aliens 3 in his piece.
Well, you know what I think about? So I say, fuck that thing. Let's kill it. Ain't give me nothing. Them Shoggoths ain't give me nothing. So I say, fuck that.
You just got to throw it up in the air, and he just swings at it every time.
He hits it too. Mm-hmm.
I got to be the Scully in this one and just go, another very predictable, we backed ourselves in the corner, so now we throw everything at the wall finale. Mm. As moving as it was not well written. in my opinion.
Okay.
There's a lot of ground that needed to be covered about the Magic. And I felt that in the 25th hour, now that we've gotten to the end of the season, we're just going to throw everything in and now try to explain it in one shot. And then everybody now suddenly knows how to use this Magic. All of a sudden, the Asian character who's been absent since for at least two episodes now, suddenly now she's back in the fold. And it just felt like we know there's a season two coming, so we're just going to go ahead and try and close this out and just move on from there. And I really think that, like, for example, that the Goonies episode, that I nicknamed the Goonies episode.
Yes.
I call it the Last Crusade, yeah. Indiana Jones Last Crusade episode. It was more apropos.
That gonna meet Kali.
There it
in
is.
In hell.
No, oh, Last Crusade 3 with the dying Crusader knight.
Oh no.
You have and the chosen, tunnel and the whole tunnel thing.
You've chosen poorly.
Yeah.
Yes. I just felt like that whole episode was completely, it did nothing for the series, and they could have used that as part of an explanation of exactly the buildup of how everybody gets to learn how to use this magic.
What are you talking about, everybody?
Well, everybody that was involved. It's just sort of, it seems like what happened tonight should have been season four, not the ending of episode of the first season. Everybody suddenly, Tick is on this machine, and then boom, 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 boom. It's like suddenly everybody's, like the whole episode felt like that. The ancestors came back.
Right.
Everybody suddenly now understanding the word. I mean, reading that magic perfectly. Like, just like nobody, it didn't feel organic. It kind of felt like the whole season we were building up to something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then in this particular episode, everybody got what they needed to get. Several sacrifices were made. And then here we are without really, because I really felt like you had his mother, you had his mother, his great grandmother, mm-hmm. and right. then the ancestor from Tulsa.
Okay, right.
Now,
which is, I guess that's his maternal grandmother.
From maternal yeah. grandmother.
So that's maternal grandmother, mom, and then Hannah, who, I guess that's
his, Hannah, his mom, his grandmom, and his great-great-grandmom.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Right?
But
so
none
three
of
matrons.
That's
so three
matrons. Right.
Mm. Yeah. But none of these three characters mm-hmm. have been fully active through the whole season. We've seen them. Mm-hmm. They popped up every now and then in visions and stuff. But it just kind of felt like, okay, we introduced them in sure. other episodes. Now in this episode, they draw Tick and Laddie in.
Right.
And then they come out speaking this magic like there was no, like there was
Eminem and D12 in a cipher.
Like, yeah.
Back in 2000.
Yeah. So to me, it just felt like, I mean, all praise to the show. The show has been fantastic. It's just as a storyteller, as a person who tells and writes stories, it just felt like.
Needed two more episodes.
Yeah, at least a couple of more episodes, or at least giving us time to get to know. Like, for example.
Okay.
Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Every so often there's an episode solely based on one of these characters' past mm-hmm. that allows us to get an understanding of exactly who they are and how this and how so, like, for example, I truly would love to know more about the maternal grandmother from Tulsa, because she looked like she could put foot in ass to me. She just came off with that kind of appearance, like, I've harnessed all of this information.
Yeah.
And it would have been great to just have one solid episode with just her and Montrose, you know, since he grew up in the town.
Yeah.
And how all of that comes together, and then go into the whole thing when they travel backwards and you're like, oh, look who she's about to meet.
Real quick, FYI, Teresa Randall.
Yes.
That's a great grandma. Girl six. Yep. Yeah, she did look like a badass too. Like, she didn't take no shit. Like,
so it, to me, it just felt like, I was like, oh, we're going to go this route. We're just going to, you know, we're just basically, we got to close out the season. So this is how we close it out. Mm-hmm. It wasn't horrible. And I guess to the average person watching the show, none of that matters. You know, in hindsight, it doesn't, it's not something that I would say ruined an entire season, but I felt that it just felt, all of a sudden, everybody kind of knew what they were doing. And I was just like, but we missed something somewhere. I just felt like we should have had a couple of episodes where we kind of cleared up. You know, maybe some of these people came to people in visions. That was my thing. That's what annoyed me, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, here we go. Now everybody's doing this stuff kind of almost flawlessly. Like, especially near the end when Laddie is up there and the woman is telling her, look, stop, it's not working, you know, and it's just like, when did you learn to speak this language so perfectly? Like, it's literally, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the other woman's like, oh, this is the moment that they told me about. So she steps up on the steps. But there was like, no, there's like, I just feel there's one or two episodes that should have gotten a little bit deeper with those relationships.
Well, how much of that do you then blame on the, let's call it the HBO business model, where if you can't explain it in 10 episodes, then you just ass out?
I don't even know if I would blame
the deadline.
I don't even know if I would blame
deadline/budget restrictions.
In hindsight.
You do get a budget for that episode. If you can't do it in 10 episodes, that's it. That's a done deal.
I mean, in hindsight, if I was to look at it from a different standpoint, I would say we left all of that out, because in season two, we can then go back and revisit these situations depending on the direction they decide to go. It could be that the next season they're trying to revive Tick. That might be the case, and they have to then,
bless you,
thank you,
we then get the backstories
to kind of lead up to that. I don't think there's going to be a season two. I don't think it's going to be a season two, unless you heard otherwise. I mean, real quick, Mark, I actually agree with you on this point. Your argument? Remember episode two when they got to Montrose really fast? And there are certain things that they could have, that they'd had to expand to explain that half of stuff, right?
Right.
No one mentioned, as I remember watching it, no one mentioned that the dimension that they're in is not bound to time. If they mentioned that, like, you know, this, we have the time to learn the book because this dimension is outside of time.
Right.
Right? Then you have a montage or something, or a situation where you have it, where it seems like they're going through a long time. Mm-hmm. But yet, for Montrose and Ruby, it's still only a few seconds.
Right.
They only passed out a few seconds ago. Mm-hmm. If that was a scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
The other thing, actually, I remember from last episode that Teresa Randall, badass grandma, mm-hmm. she said she never opened a book. Mm-hmm. I remember her mentioning it. They have showed a preview of her saying she was told not to open a book, but to just keep it safe.
Right.
Well, how are you going to help them learn the language if you never open a book? You know, and that's how I want to say that the rush came in and they had to complete it. Mm-hmm. So details fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Right? Like a real bad continuity situation on camera was Tick is strapped to the wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, after she cuts his wrist open and he bleeds out, then you see that the straps are gone. If she cut his arms and cut the strap at the same time, he would have fell over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What's keeping him in there? If it's magic he's in there, then you don't need the straps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's a visual continuity situation.
Right.
So those little things, it did feel, to my chagrin, like this, like it wasn't sure, they weren't sure they were going to get a second season. Mm-hmm. So, all right, we got to finish the storyline then.
Right.
Because if you knew you were going to get a second season within production and HBO, to Steven's point, HBO said, you know what, I have a lot of faith in this, let's give him a second season. After the first episode showed, it's like, oh, well, guess what? We'd like to use some of that then to expand it and have the conclusion flip over into the next season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's why I'm saying I don't think they're going to have a second season.
Yeah, and I just happened to, since we're all here together, I did a quick lookup and the immediate sort of like overall media coverage is agreeing with you, Kirk, that there probably is not going to be a second season, if only because as far as the source material goes, they've kind of exhausted it.
Yeah, that's where it ends. I mean, if there were going to be a second season, it would be a thing where we would have heard about it before this episode even mm-hmm. showed up. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of it's a bittersweet ending on yeah. many levels.
Yes,
yeah,
not just on content, but on its story, like you're saying, the storytelling. And that little visual continuity thing that I had.
Yeah. The same article I just skimmed while we were here also mentioned that Watchmen might only be a one season hit.
Well, Watchmen was definitely one season. The creators of the show said they weren't coming back.
Right.
You know, he said that was supposed to be just a one-time thing, and then he was mm-hmm. done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I love the way they left that because it does, you know, it leaves you wondering, you know, was she or, you know, was it all, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was a great, mm-hmm. that was his purpose too, actually. You know, the purpose was,
yeah,
you know, that's done.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I will say about this show, it just kept moving. It never really lost its footing. It never felt like it was dragging at any different point in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a couple of episodes I kind of, you know, in looking back at the entire season, I'm just sort of like, well, did we need to spend an entire episode on this one particular thing where it was not going to lead to anything more? Or could we have spent more time, you know? I mean, one thing I did learn is the next movie, Miss Smollett should be in is the Jack a Joint a Curtsy. That girl can run like every time I looked up, I was like, well, damn, she running the 400. She running the 250 seconds flat. I'm like, yeah. That girl can run.
Yeah, except when she's got the book of names.
The book of names.
That's when she wants to do the.
So why y'all mad about that? Man?
I'm not mad at it at all. I understood. Like the funny thing about that sequence was, I'm sitting here screaming at the TV, like, "Would you run? Will you hurry?
Right.
The portal is closing. Like this is not the time to do."
But she don't know it, right?
You become the Angela Bassett walking away from the car. Right.
You become that movie theater goer that we all don't like. Shh, shh. No, man, can you see she walking and Ruby like fucking got phone coming out of her mouth and shit?
She needs to
be running.
Oh, now she walking. You gonna be walking, you don't shut up. Who said that?
I will say this. That show has the best screenshots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There are some very iconic moments in that show.
Yeah.
And I was laughing with somebody on Facebook, the episode with the two demons.
Oh yeah.
And somebody on Facebook was mentioning, I think it was Lisa Woods, had made this mention. She goes, she couldn't put a finger on what was creeping her out about those two girls. And I wrote back, I was like, the second they showed up, they reminded me, you remember that scene in The Wiz in the train station?
Yes.
With the little dude, with the dude, with the puppets that just grew and started chasing them. I was like, that's the first thing that popped in my head when I saw those two girls. And she was like, oh my God, you're right. And I was like, because to this day, that thing still freaks me out with that, in the train station with those, I don't know what they were, puppets. But
marionette,
them puppets, yeah. But.
Scared me that did in a train station. That scared me.
Empty subway station too.
Yeah.
But I would.
But the dance moves for those two demons. That's the other thing that really kind of set that off. It was like.
Yeah.
It was like scary hip hop shit, which was I call myself fairly tolerant. Of spooky shit, but even I was like, God damn, son.
I saw on Instagram, they got a video of the two young ladies who are dancing and they're doing their choreographed movement, put a camera on Instagram. And that is some of the most amazingly athletic, synchronized, all types of golden tomfuckery I have ever seen. I was looking. I was like, "Wow, wow,
yeah,
wow!" I went back and watched this episode just to see that dance again. I was like, "Man, you got to give them. They got to get some type of Alvin Ailey Award or something, because that was all types of yes."
Yeah. If Alvin Ailey gave out a Halloween award, I guess that.
Right. Yeah, fodder for cosplay.
They beat a shooter. Yeah.
Well, you know next year.
What are you talking about this year, dog? No, Halloween is right down the block.
Yeah, but.
that's true. But next year, the Comic-Con's
not happening.
The Comic-Con's next year, that's all that's going to be running through. People going to be like, look, I'm playing with you. Stay away from me.
Bruh.
Right?
All I want to see is the sister with her white boyfriend. The sister coming in as Ruby and her white boyfriend coming in as a Shargon. I'll die for that shit. I'll die for that shit right there. I'll go up to that dude and say, you know what? You're an ally. You're an ally.
Well, shit, he better be.
Yeah, right? You know, dress up as a monster for cosplay? Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Ruby and William when you first brought that up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Diana and the Shoggoth, not Ruby.
I know. Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah. Dude, yeah, Mark, I'm like, this might be a first, Mark. I actually agree with you.
I know.
Once I said that, I thought Steven's nose was going to start bleeding.
I actually agree with you. No, see, the problem is
Kirk, I will probably get checked for a brain aneurysm later, but
it's like Kirk's like, for once, I agree with you. See, Kirk, that's the problem. Wait, what?
Right.
No, I mean, I looking back at the entire season, I think that was the only, that episode, the Indiana Jones episode just seemed to be the only one that didn't lead to much of anything.
Right.
And I guess if they were trying to be faithful to the source material, I would really like to go back and read that part and figure out what that had to do with the overall.
It did, but that, yeah, you know what? Spoilers again, because you read the book. Okay. They actually get the book.
The book of names.
The book of names.
Okay.
During that, I think that episode was really to underscore the title of the History of Violence. That's what it really came down to, because it delved into Titus's history of violence,
right?
And how Montrose's history of violence comes to play. So it was, I think it was more or less about the plot and more about the theme for that episode.
I gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like with the Korean War episode.
Yeah, which was fantastic.
That was added. That's never in the book.
That's not in the book.
That's not in the book. That was added.
But you know what?
So that character was added for the finale.
And that's the kind of episode that I'm talking about. They should have done a blueprint for the, I mean, I understand, you know, for HBO purposes, you know, we're trying to do one and done and get this out of the way. But it would have been powerful. I think what would have really been a powerful episode if it had started off in Tulsa, the grandmother and Montrose as a child, and something happening, and then that night, you know, when the riot starts to, when everything starts to begin, and she goes into the room, and Laddie's standing there in the room, and she's like, and then we go to the next episode is them jumping through and finding out why she's there.
You know, all right, no offense to my LGBTQ brothers and sisters out there, but the episode, the scenes where Montrose finds himself or finds his freedom, finds his moment of glory, I think that's what happened. It feels like that might have been a thing. You know what I mean? Because you have Montrose opening up and having his, you know, having a fight with his son and having that because that was two things that happened. It was that, and what was else was going on? Do anybody guys remember?
In that episode, there was...
Yeah, because Montrose... All right, Montrose's change in character, his character arc, didn't actually have to be like that. It could have been something else.
So you're saying they could have left that out.
Yeah, and put
maybe in, given us a little more of... Well,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I suppose, because again, you know, you're only dealing with 10 episodes, and it's kind of funny because you know, it's like what you guys are making me think about also is just the fact that, all right, so with HBO, you've got 10 high quality episodes, the effects are phenomenal, everything is just super, super tight. And you know, maybe there's a rush story at the end because you've got that 10 episode border. And then on the flip side of that, but serving the same sort of nerd community, not, you know, to some degree, you've got these CW shows that literally have 24 episodes a season. Like, I don't even, like, honestly, I don't even know how those actors have personal lives. Because, like, if you ever tried to binge watch, like, a season of Arrow, like, you're literally, you literally have to have food delivered.
Yeah.
in order to, like, you know, get through that, because it's mad episodes. It's like, and you know, they're rehearsing these fight scenes. They're doing all this, you know, they're doing the same thing. It's just their effects aren't great. So it's like, it's just funny.
Well, it shows in the effects, right? It shows in the effects.
It shows in the effects, because it's rushed. It's not as convincing. It's, you know, it almost looks like animation at times. Right. But it's right. But then the story is flushed. It's
flushed.
Yeah.
Flushed the fuck out.
Characters are flushed.
And yes, everybody has motive, need. Everything's everything about each individual character is established almost to the point where some of the characters are allowed to be super fucking annoying.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because it's almost this sort of like soap opera kind of thing, because now you almost have too much ground to cover.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing 20 episodes. So there's, I guess with all of these things, there's a sweet spot. I want to say the CW kind of overshoots. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like their ball goes right into the parking lot. Yeah. And then HBO, you know, depending on the story itself, it's like sometimes, you know, it'll be a home run, but it'll just be right over the wall.
I think you encapsulated the eternal war between business and art.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, right? How many episodes did Westworld have? I want to say 12.
Originally 12, I think.
Yeah, first season was 12.
First season. Think about that.
12.
And they went out with a bang.
And that's tough too, because, you know, a lot of people complain.
They must have had a big budget.
They had to have a crazy budget.
Yeah.
But a lot of people complained that the first episodes were slow. A lot of people complained about that.
Yes.
And, you know, you would never catch me doing that, because I understand there's got to be some world building. There's got to be, you know, it's a science fiction thing. So yes, there needs to be some sort of exposition. And I don't mind exposition as long as it gets me somewhere.
Yeah.
And I know better than to not give you a couple of episodes to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I can't even tell you how many times I've had the conversation with somebody and they're like, yo, man, that first episode was whack. Star Trek Next Generation? Yeah, but you know what happened to season two?
Right.
My man.
Right.
I remember Next Gen, that first episode, I was like, huh, all right. All of them kind of had those first kind of, we got to get through the mud before we get to, you know, if you even go back to the movie, you know, the original motion picture, because,
a little clunky.
Because
had one of the best naps in the world. Slept like a baby. I never slept like that in my life. Never happened again. I remember that shit like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember clearly going to see that movie with my father.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, I think it was after they got into the V'ger expanse. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where I turned and looked at him. Mm-hmm. He looked at me in the dark, and we both went. he was almost like wanting to say I'm sorry, and my look was like, so what is this now? Because nothing. But it was a straight science fiction story. It's pure science fiction.
Yeah.
It's almost, I would almost liken it to like how people put 2001 on a pedestal. I'm sorry. There's a point.
Say it.
There was a moment where after they found, I think it was after he found the mot, like, wait. So there's that scene when he's leaving Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to, I guess he's going to the moon.
Yeah.
And it's that beautiful orchestration But that orchestration had to be what? Somewhere between 7 and 9 minutes long. Yeah. And I remember falling asleep and waking up, and he still hadn't gotten there. And I was like, there's no dialogue. They're just traveling. And I'm like, are we going to get, like, and I guess finally, you know, they get to the monolith, you know, on the moon and this and that, and then we crack forward another God knows how many years. And it wasn't until recently I watched the movie. It was on. And at the end, with the child, I suddenly realized, wait, that's the astronaut. It's taken me 25 years to realize that's what this was.
Oh, he said 25 years.
Yes, for me to realize, to get past the acid trip at the end.
I'm this many years old.
When you realize, and I'm like, oh, okay. But I remember even Star Trek that happened. My father was like, I was like, what is V'ger? And he was like, all right, on the ride home. Okay, so NASA has the Voyager class. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm just curious because I didn't understand. Was the woman V'ger or was the thing V'ger? I just remember feeling some sort of way that the dude decided he wanted to give up his life and bond with this woman. And I was like, okay, this is creepy and yet fascinating at the same time. And then I don't see him again until Seventh Heaven, the actor. And I'm like, oh, hey, he was in.
That's what happened. That was him. Oh, shit. He's like,
that's where you've been. And then what happens? They realize a mistake, and then they do Star Trek II, which is more like a Star Wars type movie, because that's what people went to see. They wanted to see, you know, space battles. You know, you have all on TV, you had the Klingons, you had all of these different, and none of these people were in the movie fighting the Federation. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that was the... you know, we were happy finally once we got a movie. You know, I mean, I remember Channel 11 having to show Space Seed again, so we all knew.
Know what was going on.
Who knew who Khan was.
Right.
I remember that.
Ricardo Montalban. Okay. Go ahead, Ricardo.
Yeah, Lovecraft Country.
Wow, yeah. So, on that note... Are you saying that sci-fi heads are not necessarily pretending to like that first Star Trek movie and pretending to like 2001 A Space Odyssey? But it's kind of like when you go to the museum and you're looking at Monet and people are asking you, well, what do you see? And I'm like, well, it's nice.
How you gonna put my man on the spot like that? But can while I answer I'm, for you, Mark? Can while, I answer for you, Mark?
While I'm can sitting on you, the bridge, while I'm yeah. sitting on the bridge of the Defiant.
Right.
I'm answer for you, Mark, because you know what? You shouldn't have to answer that question. I'll answer for you. You damn right. Damn motherfuckers ain't know what the fuck. Half them motherfucking tricky motherfuckers fell asleep with me. I saw them. I heard them. We was all snoring at the same time. Motherfuckers next to me woke up. One dude woke up and was like, you know what happened? I was like, nah, man. I had a dream, though.
Well, you know, it is dark. The seats are comfortable. I mean, you know.
That was shit.
I fell asleep in Minority Report. You know, I was also really, really drunk. Mm. But
I didn't see no black people in the show, so I didn't see it.
Well, you know what? I fell asleep. I fell asleep during Mission to Mars. Okay. I went to go see that thing, and I literally had to go out and get another Coke to try to wake up. Because I was like, yo, why? What? And then I start to feel bad, because I'm like, is it that I'm not getting it and everybody else around me is getting it? Uh-huh. Or is it really that the movie is this slow? Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I don't mind a slow-moving film, but...
You want to be warned at least, right?
But I mean, if I fall asleep, there should be a reason. Like, it should not be because the film is slow. It should be like when Ben and I went to see the first Hulk movie and made the feeble mistake of eating at TGI Fridays and then going to see 11 o'clock movie. And we remember him getting pulsed by gamma rays. The next thing the both of us saw was him flying through the desert. And Ben looked at me. She was like, do you know what happened? I'm like, I don't. Like, I was like, how long have I been out?
I have a question again. Question, Ben. Because we've all seen movies that were not as fast paced as we've hoped they should have been. And then we've all saw movies that were slower paced and we didn't mind it. It was, you know, it was kind of like, all right, yeah, it's part, you know, are we talking about maybe the entire situation of mise-en-scene, you know, the blocking, how it's shot, how the actors are responding to each other during those moments, or how the character is responding to the environment around him that adds to the slowness or the uninterestingness of this of the pace. You know what I mean? I've watched movies that weren't science fiction but were slow paced.
Sure.
And enjoyed it. There was one movie I remember recently, which Jonathan Majors is actually acting in with Danny Glover, The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And that was slow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it but it started with montages of San Francisco neighborhood, right? With a preacher dude, you know, doing his soapbox in the middle of the street. And it was an arresting vision. It was like, wow, that was an engaging vision, right?
Right.
Then you see the two friends sitting there, Jonathan Majors and the other guy, Jimmy Fails, are sitting there, and it's a slow scene, right? They're just sitting there talking, and one guy goes, you know what? I ain't gonna wait for the bus. I'm gonna see my skateboard. And you see him on his skateboard. Jonathan Majors, he's on a skateboard already, and Jonathan Majors is running behind him, jumps on the back of the skateboard, and they're both running through the skateboard together into San Francisco. And it's like a long montage scene of them, you know, together on a skateboard, and you have a really interesting camera shot and everything that they see. So my question pretty much is, a lot of it, my opinion, I think a lot of it comes down to camera work. Like, what are you showing the audience at that moment to keep them engaged? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we need exposition, right? We need shots of the city, we need shots of the desert, we need shots of something. We need to establish this world. Mm-hmm. But can you do that and keep it engaging, keep it where your mind is moving and not just falling back like, oh, that's just the mountain, oh, that's just the building. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
and I wonder if that's what it is.
You know who is good at doing that?
Who?
Sergio Leone.
Yeah.
Sergio Leone could open them like the opening to Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whew. With Woody Strode and that whole thing with them waiting for the train. Mm-hmm. The train comes in and it's just this tension that's built. Nobody's saying anything and everything is based on visual and sound. Mm-hmm. You know, right. you hear the windmill creaking, you hear the water thing going. Right.
And your mind is like, what the fuck is
going on? And you're engaged because you're like, but I think when you, when it's a situation where things have been moving for a while, and then we just stop for these long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's in editing, if the director's like, look, I just want to have, like, draw this out because the cinematographer did some great work. Like, Oh my God, what is that? David Lean. Oh my God, why am I forgetting the name of it? Peter O'Toole. Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia, okay.
The scene at the well.
Yes.
When Omar Sharif is coming toward them in the desert.
Yeah, that's a long ass take. It's a long ass motherfucking take. But the audio, but the musical score that accompanied it,
yeah,
kept you on your seat, right? It's that marriage of the music, the shot, the content, right? If I remember, it was like drums playing in the background as you see as
he's coming through the heat, yeah.
That's what it was, I think, right? You didn't get that in Star Trek. No, you did get that in Star Trek, the motion picture, but it was this orchestral, just big swell of.
But you know what? I think they shot themselves because you were, if you watched the show, you were expecting Star Trek. You were expecting the show. And what you got was
probably the Fellini version of the show.
Roddenberry ran in there and was like, we got a budget. I don't know what we're going to do with all this money. but hey.
Hey, what you got to say?
I mean, could you have imagined going to see the pilot episode of Next Generation on the screen?
Fair enough. Or pilot episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that was also kind of like them getting their feet in the water, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about Alien? That first couple of minutes in Alien.
Yeah, I mean,
when the ship comes in of view and music, you know, this probably just bothered me always was the music playing because it was like that fucking 2020, whatever, orchestra.
2001.
Castro, 2001 orchestra. You know, and you're like, Anyway, look.
But I mean, that's what... I think at that in that time period, you know, to set like that was kind of like a set thing to do. Right, exactly. That was even though your chroma key is kind of not letting us see what you're doing. Right. Yeah. that was kind of like I guess like a set standard. I mean, they even did it in Aliens. They even had a shot like that in Aliens where you know the big spaceship drifting by
the very first scene,
and then you know there's like the swell of the orchestra and all of that, you know. I kind of want to say they're still doing it, you know, when you have a giant spaceship going by, and like I'm pretty sure they did that at least three times in the
music was different.
Well, yeah,
I feel they did that in Expanse.
Sure.
But yet something was different about it. Oh, I think one of the things that was different about Expanse is when you get introed, they intro you with people doing something. Mm-hmm. They were hauling ice off an asteroid. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think I want to say one of the very first scenes is an asteroid cutting loose from its grappling, crashing into the hull of the ship, and a dude getting his arm severed. In slow motion in space, so that shit is happening. Like, oh my God! Right? and I think that I mean, go back to what we were saying. Lovecraft didn't have any of those moments, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, they also didn't have giant spaceships.
They did actually, remember?
Well, at the very beginning. Yes, very beginning.
but it just happened to show up during the Korean War and colorized everything.
Yeah.
Oh shit, it's a spaceship. Oh shit, it's green.
I feel bad for people who thought that was going to be what the whole show was going to be like.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Just that one big acid trip, sort of like live action yellow submarine with monsters type thing. It's like, what the fuck?
It's like, wait, is that Jackie Robinson? I was like, wait, what? And I was like, all right, so this got to be a dream because Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it I guess in hindsight, I mean, I guess that's the other thing. It's like this world is supposed to be married to the world that we're living in. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you think about it, one of the disheartening things about it is that we're dealing with all of this social injustice.
Yes.
And even with all the magic, there's nothing like she could be better if we were living in this realm, you know, almost, I mean, cause it, you know, unlike Harry Potter, where the two worlds, they kind of function within each other, but they don't, you know, the two paths try not to cross too much.
Right.
Cause I was having a discussion with someone about the episode when they go back to Tulsa. Mm-hmm. I personally think what they should have done with that episode was not go back on the day of the massacre, but go back 2 days before so that they could see what life is like. Well, what life was like in that kind of city, in that environment. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for, because they don't live in that kind of environment. Their environment is consistent. It's rampant racism 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what would have been interesting if they had gone back a couple of days before, stayed 2 days, got out of there before the massacre happened, and one of them used the invincible spell to go into the black neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and put it on everything, so that if the cops ever came through their neighborhood again and tried that crap, nothing would work. Right. And that would have been like a crazy scene where, you know, like for example, the scene when the creatures come and kill all the police. Mm-hmm. If the neighborhood had started to turn more African American, and the cops came in there and people were just sort of like sitting on their porches, like, yeah, nothing's gonna happen to us, you know, and kind of move into that realm where because even the police, was he a police chief? The one that was the man, the one that cursed the girl.
He's
a police chief. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know, he's using magic actively to hurt African Americans, as opposed to, you know, us knowing how to use it to protect ourselves, except until he, you know, he tried that stunt where he tried to walk through the front door, mm-hmm. and there was a protection spell on the house, and he was like, Oh, we special now. So we, you know.
I mean, it would have been, I mean, of course, you know, with the other caveats that the voodoo priestess that they used in the third episode was coming back around. Then you have that. And then you have convincing black folks in 1921 that magic is not the devil's work. And that cross on your door or by your door is not going to save you. Mm-hmm. But the blood of this goat and some incantations going to save you. You know, that's a long trip. And and the other part is, you know, and of course, because of how they wrote it, that everything, it was actually a moment of urgency. Mm-hmm. Because it was such a moment of urgency, they had to come in and out.
You know, right.
If it wasn't for the fact that actually, and the Deus Ex Machina is Ruby coming. You know what I mean? Ruby showing up and says, why is my daughter like this?
Not well, Ruby. That's,
come fix it.
Ruby's I'm the sorry. Sister.
Not Ruby. Hippolyta.
Hippolyta.
Sorry. When Hippolyta comes in, she goes, y'all niggas got to come and save my daughter. We got to do this quick. You ain't got no time to be hanging out with nobody. Go get the book and come get my daughter better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's, I guess that's part of the, that's just the mechanisms of the of that. That's,
yeah. I mean, to Mark's point, and having done as much research on Tulsa as I have, for that animated piece anyway. yes, it would have been real nice to see everyday random day Black Wall Street at its height with mm-hmm. everybody. Because you'll notice the one scene from episode 9 where they looked out the window and realized that they were going to have to get in some serious clothes mm-hmm. in order for people to not be looking at them funny. And it still didn't quite work out because her shoes weren't
yeah, she still had on the sneakers.
Pro Kids?
Yeah, I guess she had on something that really
like Vans.
Right. It probably was. I don't know. Did they have Vans back then?
No, Converse. I think she had on Converse.
It was Converse. So. Converse, yeah.
She had on them Chuck Willeries.
Nice. Need to run away from some oppression? Get these.
You're right.
But
running on Chuck Turner's.
It would have been nice. But again, you know, going back to, you know, me watching Abacus, you know, it's like it's a time constraint, it's an episode constraint. I would have loved for a whole episode of them just chilling and flushing that whole bit of business out, you know, with the abusive mm-hmm. dad knowing that mm-hmm. Montross is gay and them just mm-hmm. a whole episode of that would have been dope. Mm-hmm.
Was that why he was beating Montrose?
That's exactly why he was beating Montrose.
Because he was drunk and he thought his son was gay?
Yeah.
Huh.
No, he had picked up, I think he might have caught him with the boy or something. I mean,
he beat him because he caught him playing with, he caught him wearing George's suit.
I think that was an excuse.
I know later on Montrose says mm-hmm. that he went to see the boy and told him they couldn't be friends anymore because I think the boy was showing more signs of it than he was.
Right.
And you know, it was one of those, it's like that moment in It when Richie is playing he's playing Street Fighter with the kid in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And he goes, he says, let's play one more game. And their hands kind of touch.
Yeah.
And they look at each other and you could tell, you know, the boy is like, oh, you know, it's like Richie figures out, you know, the kid is, you know, right. he's gay. And then the bully comes out and he's like, you know, what do you think? You know, then he turns around and is like, oh, I'm not gay. Why are you trying to like touch my hand and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And Richie's like, I'm not trying to do that. And the guy, you know, the bully comes after him.
Right.
So it's like one of those moments where, you know, but I was wondering that. I was just wondering because I know that the reason behind the beating was that he claimed, you know, you were messing around with the suit and this, that, the other thing.
If I'm remembering it correctly, that was the cover story that he was giving them while they were standing in the barn watching him. Mm-hmm. And then if you listen to the father, he actually says at one point to George, well, at least I'm not the only man in the house.
Yeah, he does. He does. So, he did say that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of caught from that.
So just a thought. Stories being told like that. I mean, now that I had posted on Facebook, there's a, you know, somebody posted on Facebook, there were, of course, you know, many other places within America that suffered from these race riots.
Yeah.
Well-known at the time, affluent and upwardly mobile Black neighborhoods that were destroyed. And I wonder if, you know, telling stories using those settings before the riots. What was it like? To pretty piggyback on what you're saying, Mark, tell the stories of what those places were like before the riots. So if we do, let's say we do a ghost story or a wizard story or a hoodoo story. Mm-hmm. But you said it in Tulsa before the riots, maybe a year or two before, mm-hmm. right? So you have this other thing going on. You know what I mean? And I thought about this because, you know what? I never hear or read about any fiction or fantasy stories or historical fantasies, and if anybody has, please feel free to hit me up, let me know, on where Carthage, where you had to deal with Carthage before they had to deal with the Romans. Mm-hmm. Carthage is around more than 700 years. Carthage was, I want to say 600 maybe, 700 years mm-hmm. before having to fuck with Rome.
Right.
Right.
So what was going on before then? You know what I mean? Well, there was a height. It had its height between the time it was founded and the time it fell. There was a point where Carthage was an empire.
Right.
So why not tell stories in those settings? Because these are places and people and environments that can be used for storytelling. Right? St. Tulsa, Rosewood,
Elaine.
Detroit. Was it?
Mm-hmm. Elaine.
Elaine, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just tell it. You can tell these stories about these people before they had to deal with the horrors that destroyed their world.
I think, just logistically speaking, I think the problem is somebody's got to survive to tell the story.
No. I meant...
He's talking about time travel.
No. I'm not talking about time travel. I'm not being specific. I mean, well, A, you do have survivors of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what I'm talking about is if we do fictional tales, mm-hmm. you guys did a tale, a story about hell at the way station. Mm-hmm. Way station ain't there no more.
Right.
But you said it during the time when it was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. You know what I mean? I'm talking about, documentaries. I'm not talking about documentaries.
I know what you're talking about. Fiction, and it's set during the positive times rather than.
Because we know it's the 1900s, it's the 1920s, right? Mm-hmm. You know they're not backwards. It's mm-hmm. an affluent, rising neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So they have the same, so they're going to experience and have the same kind of things that America at that time were dealing with. Mm-hmm. Flapper dresses, jazz, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Horse and buggy cars. You know, somebody just bought a car and he's riding it through Tulsa, the first car in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm just saying stories like that, just to piggy bank on what you're saying, Mark. Because, yeah, that would have been I'd love to see something where we get to see that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think
that it's not all just horror.
The sad part is that oftentimes the most interesting thing about these things is the tragedy. That's what people and which I know and I when you shake your head, I agree with you because it shouldn't be. But I mean,
yeah.
I mean, think about this. Think about someone telling a story about them being on the Titanic and they got off the ship mm-hmm. before it was set sail, because it made cool. one other stop before it made its way across the North Atlantic, right. Which I think there's one, I think it was in Scotland. It was either, it was somewhere either, I want to say Ireland or Scotland, I can't remember, but there's one picture out there of the ship as it was leaving. And they were like, this was the last shot of the ship before, mm-hmm. you know, that night before it hit the iceberg and went down. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many people, I guess if you told a really, really solid story.
Yeah. A solid standalone story.
A standalone story and make it interesting enough. And people like, oh, you know, that's crazy that happened before, you know, X, right. Y, and Z, you know, like right. the person got off the ship. And not one of those, oh, I got clairvoyance and I felt something bad was going to happen when I got off the boat. You know, what's his name, bought passage because he couldn't get to X, Y, and Z to see his cousin who was sick, you know, and mm-hmm. his adventure that night on the ship mm-hmm. before he had to get off. And like I did, for example, one of my courses for my MFA, I wrote a story about a detective who captured a serial killer on the Carpathia. The guy jumped onto the car, stole this woman's tickets on the Carpathia, because a lot of people don't know that the Carpathia was a passenger ship. Mm-hmm. And he caught the guy and he went to the to the captain and he said, look, we got to turn around because I got to take this guy back to New York.
Yeah.
And the guy and the captain's like, we're not turning around. We're not going back to America. So, you know, you're just going to have to figure out what you're going to do when we get. And then later on, there's this big dust up on the ship. And he goes back to the captain, and the captain says, well, it looks like you're going to be able to go back to New York. And he goes, why? What happened? He says, we're answering a distress call, and we have to pick some people up because the ship is sinking.
Right.
And we're going to have to take these people back to New York. And I never say what ship it is, but, you know, the night, you know, I'm in... You know, it's the Carpathia. If you know who the Carpathia is, and it's all through conversation with the captain, his first mate, and everybody on the bridge, basically like this latitude, longitude, we're not going to make it in 2 hours. There's no, even if we go at high speed, we'll never make it there.
Yeah.
And the guy finally says, you know, at the end of the story, you know, we had to pick up these, you know, a couple of 3 hours later, we ended up picking up these survivors from this lost cruise ship,
right.
You know. I mean, you can do it. It's just you got to make the story interesting enough that people are like, you know, because there's always going to be that one person like, oh, you didn't mention the riot. You didn't mention this. You didn't mention that. You didn't mention. But that's not what the story is about. The story's not about.
Right. It's about someone. It's about Montrose and his dealing with his dad.
Yeah.
With them not knowing that about this thing that's coming to get them, right? Like you had said about the scene. If you had started with the episode where you find the grandmom and Letty having this conversation, or you have that situation where grandmom and the kids are talking about the prom and, you know, why it got shut down and stuff like that. And then she sees Letty and you look at the Letty and her and Letty, you know, being evasive.
Yeah.
And then you cut that episode, that scene, and it doesn't pick up until the next episode or episode down the line to explain who's Letty and why she's there. Because then we know who Letty is now. Mm. Now we need to know why the fuck she was in 1921.
Yeah.
Right? And
to that point, that's another reason why I don't... We did a Terminator again. I have serious issues with the holes in the Terminator.
Yes.
Storyline, particularly the second film. You could drive a freight train through them. Mm-hmm.
But that had Guns N' Roses, baby. Just and I leave you lying on the bed. Sorry.
No.
I like Guns N' Roses. Sorry.
Hey, so do I. But here's the thing. You got to be very careful when you're talking about time travel and introduce things into a story that you just got to be like, oh, come on. So let me get this straight. Montrose and his people are getting beat the hell up.
Yeah.
Many years later, it never crosses your mind that your son happens to look like the guy who showed up and saved your behind in Tulsa and then disappeared.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, see, because the thing is that
I don't remember the face of the first woman I had sex with. And that was a long time ago. I'm just saying, if she showed up again, I'd be like this. Who the fuck is that?
Hi, guy. You come. He say. No, my thing is when you introduce something, when you introduce something like that.
Yeah.
I never liked those kind of things because it implies that Montrose's life and destiny were already pre-written.
I see.
Because I remember, because that was always my problem with the Terminator, which was, so the leader of the resistance, John Connor, will not exist unless Reese is sent back, because Reese is his father.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a lot of stuff that's got to happen just right.
So Reese says to her, at one point, she goes, you're from the future. And he says, one possible. And I'm like, no, that's not a possible future. It is the future you're from, because if you don't get sent back, then John Connor doesn't exist.
Well, Mark, remember.
Hold on.
So Reese don't know that.
No. I'm not talking about Reese knowing it. Reese has no clue. John knows this.
John knows it. That's why he sends him in the
first place. So John has to make sure he finds Reese in order to send him back and basically say, you can't come back here. You know?
Right, the older rebel leaders out there, I'm looking for a handsome, blonde, maybe about 5'10", 5'11". Reese, his name is.
So the thing.
Please send him to HQ immediately.
So the thing is,
right,
what if the Terminator, in trying to kill Sarah, turns around and kills Reese to get to Sarah, and Sarah survives?
Right.
There's still no John. Because Reese is dead.
No, you just did, right?
Yes, I do.
What you just did.
I'm going cross-eyed.
No. What you just did, you just gave a plausible and justifiable reason for baby daddies. He wasn't married. There's no birth certificate for Reese. Reese is a baby daddy. Reese is a missing father. Reese ain't around no more. So the Terminator don't know who they are. He don't know who the father is.
No. What I'm saying is this.
Can't go after Reese. Yes.
No. What I was saying was this. Mm-hmm. Reese sees, for example, Reese goes into the club.
Yes.
He sees the Terminator move on Sarah. Yes. He fires on the Terminator. They go out the door. Now, let's just say the Terminator got up and fired and hit Reese in the back of the neck and killed him. Yes. This is before Reese sleeps with Sarah.
Yeah.
So, and let's just say the Terminator, for whatever reason, the machine, the unit itself gets defeated or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's no John because Reese is dead. Reese never slept with the mom. So, you know, at some point in all of this craziness, John is like, in his mind, you got to get busy with my mother.
You my dad,
because he never says don't sleep. We don't know what he told Reese when Reese went through the thing.
He didn't tell him shit. He just said protect this woman, or nothing will happen. That's all he said.
Because I wondered if Skynet was sitting around after the thing closed, went. Well, that didn't work. All right. What else we got? We got a liquid crystal. All right, send that one through. See, damn it, man, this ain't working. It's like,
you figure after the first movie, Skynet was looking at it, was talking to itself like, okay, we have to find out what a baby daddy is. We can't have John Connor without just a mom, because there has to be two humans that make this child. So we know who the name of the mama is. Who the baby daddy? What is a baby daddy? I don't know what a baby daddy is. Maybe we should do some research. Let's do some research on a baby daddy. Can't find him. Shit, we got to find out what the hell this guy is. And that's probably the reason why Skynet was trying to destroy humanity, because they didn't know who the baby daddy is. They had to kill everybody.
Like, you know what?
It's like the reason why Skynet did not want to destroy humanity. It had to survive.
Wow, so did you just Cobra Kai the Terminator franchise? Is that what you just did?
I did, yes.
Oh my God.
Nobody ever said, could you imagine Skynet having that conversation with itself? It's like, maybe we should look for the father. All right. Anybody else got an idea? What? No, like, he don't have no daddy. So how'd he get here?
Right. That's the conversation. Maybe we should kill everybody.
Who is this? Who's this program? L4238. Would you disconnect him, please? Because he didn't got on my last nerve.
Oh, shit.
And meanwhile, he had a point. Yeah. Had a big
just
point.
Kill them all. Just kill them all. Just kill them all.
I mean, that was the plan anyway. Kill them all. Plan, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but it was the only reason he had that plan is because of John Connor. He didn't know who John Connor's daddy was. So they had to kill. It's a Pontius Pilate on a mass scale.
Oh, shit.
There's if I got to remind myself to find Pontius this for Skynet. You guys. Mm-hmm. There was, years ago, there was an SNL special where they did like these kind of one-offs of skits. There was one they had with President Lincoln built a time machine.
Yeah.
Okay. And he found out he finds out he went into the future and found out what happened to him.
Right.
So he starts going back in time. So there's this scene where he's walking through this town and there's this little boy, like, you know, doing the thing with the wheel, with the stick. And he goes, "Excuse me, are you John Wilkes Booth?" And the kid's like, "Yes, I am." And he pulls out a gun and starts shooting at him. And the kid starts running. Right. So then he jumps ahead,
mm-hmm.
and he walks up to this house, and he knocks on the door, and he goes, "Excuse me, sir, are you John Wilkes Booth?" And he's like, "Yes, package for you." And he's like, "From who?" And he walks off, and he's like, "Don't I know you?" And he goes in the house, and the package blows up, and John Wilkes comes back to the door, and he goes, "Who are you?" And then years later, John is sitting with this woman on a bench, and he goes, so you don't see her face, you just see the back of her. He goes, "I have something I want to tell you." He goes, "Before we go any further with this relationship, you must know there's been this man that's been chasing me my whole life. I don't know why. He doesn't say who he is, but he's been trying to kill me." And the girl pulls the veil up, and it's Lincoln.
Lincoln.
And he's
he shoots him again.
He just runs off. So they say, in the end, they said on the night that Lincoln was assassinated, they found 3 sticks of dynamite, a gun, and a knife in his pockets.
fucking Wile E. Coyote arsenal.
That is funny.
But I have to find that thing because I was like, yo, this dude.
And it's an SNL skit?
It was because they did like, it was that, and you remember Toonses, the driving cat?
Yes.
Hmm.
It was
okay.
It was part of that whole.
That long ago, okay.
Yeah, this was 90s when they did it, gosh. But I remember just howling because he kept, no matter what he did, he couldn't kill John Wilkes.
Oh, wow. All right, guys, about that time.
Okay.
Mr. Abbott, any final thoughts, non-Abraham Lincoln related?
Let's see what happens with the show. Okay. I mean, it doesn't look like there might be a second season, but you know, it's nice that they close it out.
Yes.
You know, if anything else, we're only left with the possibilities of them doing something new, sort of in the steampunk realm, which would be very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Dieselpunk. Yeah,
I would
going
say
into the 30s. But
that arm certainly looked dieselpunk. I'll tell you that.
I think if they're going to do anything, if they're not going to bring that show back, they should do a spinoff with her.
With Diane?
Yeah. Yes, and the creature.
Absolutely.
I think that should be a thing with the two of them.
People, let me tell you about my best friend. yeah, that'd be exactly. That'd be awesome. Either that.
I'd watch that. On Nickelodeon. Yeah. I'd watch
right.
that.
Right, exactly.
No Nickelodeon.
No, it doesn't say it has to be a horror thing. It could be like, you know, like a heartwarming, like, you know.
Hey. Adventures of a Young Girl and Her Chagall.
Right.
Like,
two misunderstood creatures and their adventures.
And adventures.
As they travel across America.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into adventures.
Somebody write that. Somebody write that.
Either that book. I mean, either that or the Kumio opens up a whorehouse and, you know.
Wow.
That's a different, that's a totally different channel.
That's Cinemax.
That's Cinemax. Yes, that's Cinemax. That's Cinemax. That's definitely Cinemax. That's Cinemax. And just call it Six Tales. Mark's not happy with me right now. Anyway.
Steve, that's called Starfleet disapproval. What do you think, Captain?
I think you're crazy, old man.
You know what? I'll take that, Mr. Dutton. Kirk, any last thoughts?
Lovecraft Country. Watching it again, loved it. Check out. Right, well, hold on. I'm on my camera. Right. Check out Steven. He's in Slay.
Yes.
You get the book. He is. And this gentleman down here, Mark Abbott, commander of the Defiant 7.4, held at Way Station. Both of those guys. Good work. They do good work. And check out Warrior on Cinemax.
Okay.
It takes place during, it's a Western, Kung Fu Western, taking place during the Tong Wars of San Francisco. In the 1800s.
Oh yeah. You
it's actually like great. It's actually phenomenal.
You were talking Chinese about dads. That last time we were last together. Time,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, right. Season 2 came out, and Lower Decks is actually pretty good too.
I've heard Lower Deck is funny.
It is hilarious.
Okay, all right.
Lower Decks is hilarious.
So real quick, first of all, as far as funny goes, I did binge the Harley Quinn cartoon series. That was actually pretty damn funny. I will give them credit for doing this sort of like off the cuff version of Harley with Hayley Cuoco, who you all remember from Big Bang Theory. She voices Harley Quinn on that show.
Oh, interesting.
yeah, pretty funny. If you have the time to sit there and you've got access to HBO Max. Real quick, just piggybacking off of Kirk's mention of Hell at the Way Station, I figured now's a good time to start talking about the fact that the sequel is in the works. The sequel is fairly done. And for me, it's this guy here, even though that's probably completely wrong in the recording. Who knows? But Kirk Johnson joins the Hell at the Way Station writing team, complete with his own personification in the story. Complete with fight scenes and, you know, and everything. So,
I'm doing some shit, y'all.
Yeah.
I do some Atticus body shit, though.
He's the, right.
Yeah. It was, if I had a six-pack instead of a keg, it'd be, yeah.
He is literally the last action hero in this one, I want to say. But we're all in it. We all kind of do fantasy version of ourselves, you could say. Mm-hmm. We all kind of live our best fantasy lives in the book, and we tell some good horror stories in the middle of it. So yeah,
Mark blows some shit up. Let's not forget Mark blowing some shit up.
He does.
I'm not gonna say how, but
no, let's not say.
Yeah.
Hell at Brooklyn T is coming your way soon, along with Growth, which is actually Ray Munn's and Jacob Pisano's How to Grow Medicinal Marijuana book, published by Laughing Black Vampire Productions. That's on its way. That should be out fairly soon. I give that like less than 2 weeks. Also, want to give a quick shout out to Gamma Xi Phi, the professional arts fraternity that all three of us belong to. This past week, they actually inducted a new chapter out of North Carolina. That was actually a lot of fun.
There you go.
To see that happen. I actually did a little voiceover work for that. So that was sweet. And yes, Slay is out, featuring myself, the curator of the book, Nicole Smith, several other people of the black horror writing persuasion, yeah, who we all know and love. So if you're so inclined, yes, please, by all means, pick that up. And I think that does it. Thank you all for joining us as we, you know, work out our Lovecraft country blues here. Shenanigans, doing our thing. Exactly.
Got a daughter with a metal arm.
Oh,
got a shirt on for a pet.
And so just for laughs, let me just tell you this real quick. I bought a theremin.
So, what? What is? Wait, let me see that again.
It's a theremin.
What? Why that look like some shit from like the 1940s, like the Thing movie?
I know. It looks like I'm getting ready to, blow some shit up with Scarface. Right? I thought you're not a little kiss, okay? I told you. Anyway.
I was two steps away from. You're on a bus. There's a bomb on it. You only got 5 minutes. What do you do? What do you do?
That's exactly what I look like, a detonator.
But it's
so
not.
You think so. Because my name is not Blofeld, I will not press the button. I am Beluga. The whale of discord.
So anyway, next episode maybe I'll have this up and running, and we'll see what's fun about that. But in the meantime, we're gonna close it.
You didn't tell me what does it do.
Okay, so remember the theme from Dark Shadows?
Yes.
And that whirring sort of like space age whirring sound noise. That's what this thing does.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Okay. Wow.
Yes.
It doesn't call anything out of the ether?
No, it doesn't do anything like that.
Doesn't
I hope not. Location? Because once I plug this thing in, who knows? But
there's a huge black star hanging over Steven's apartment. I'm not sure what that means, Mark, but you're closest, so you might need to go over and check it out. I'll be on call.
You know Mark is not coming over here. Anyways.
Yeah, you're right.
Wait. Basically.
It's pretty big, too.
That's what Steve gets, thinking he's a Ghostbuster. He gonna close that curtain and go right to bed. All right. Gentlemen, thank you. As always, very good talking to you. And thank you all for listening, watching, and participating in our shenanigans, in Beef Wine and Shenanigans. For Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott, and myself, we bid you a fond adieu.